Here we go. Chasav Shiasov Bonas. So I want to begin today by fleshing out the main idea of Poshea Kimazik, not in the classical sense, but as it applies to this discussion, where the main argument is that it's the negligence of the Poshea, or the active Shia, that constitutes a form of Nezek. Let me see. So it's a little further on here. I want to just look at a few sources that speak to this idea. We're going to look at these sources in closer detail, mostly Bava Kamma sources. But again, just to motivate the idea that when we think of harm, when we think of Nezek, we should sometimes, at least there's an argument to be made, that it doesn't consist in the collision of molecules and like the broken fender and like the destroyed item. But you could think of harm, at least in a normative sense, as when you negligently expose the thing to an improper degree of risk. Somebody, that was what we were trying to suggest on Tuesday. And I was arguing that that's one way to understand Tchilasa Pshia Sof Bonas. So it's like the thing that you're chayav for is the Pshia, because that's where the Nezek really resides. Okay, so let me just say a few things to motivate that idea. Bava Kamma people will be familiar with this. Just one source. I'm not going to say anything more about this. Just want to note it. As my father would say, to get it on the record. The Rambam Schiras Beis Gimel that we've seen a dozen times. This idea that kol ha-poshea mazeku, just like the fact of like poshea is mazik. And I think just that formulation captures the notion that we're getting at. It's the act of negligence itself that constitutes the nezek. Ve'ein hafresh, blah, blah, v'din emes m'levinim, chinu rabosai, blah, blah, blah. If you're negligent, if you're tasked with something and you're negligent, u'tasha v'lawasa, chayiv k'misha hifsid b'yadayim. So like a negligent omission, or the act of negligence, is really the same as, you know, being mazik b'yadayim. So just think that formula. When people read this Rambam, what they usually take out of the Rambam is what we took out of it a few weeks ago when we saw it. Dehainu that, shomrim cases could rise to the level of nizik and bava kamma cases. That's how the Rambam is usually understood. That's like the significant takeaway. What I want to say here, the takeaway in this sugya is quite different. The takeaway is that the act of Shia itself constitutes a type of nezek, right? So it's like the risk exposure that captures the notion of harm. Zolt, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, well, it's not directly on this, more like on the general topic of Poshea Kimazik, meaning that exposing someone to risk is itself like nezek. So I remember like a question, I think it kind of bothered me all of Bava Kamma when we talked about it then. So maybe you have like a different way of rephrasing
finally,
it now.
You're finally getting it off your chest now.
No, I think we talked about it then. I felt like I never was satisfied. So maybe now you've come up with a different way, or maybe I'll appreciate it more. But can you explain like why this would be true if you don't end up getting damaged? If Nezek doesn't actually end up happening?
Yeah, I mean, why is it like Nezek?
No, yeah, as in the problem with like this theory of attributing Nezek as even exposing you to damage, you still have to acknowledge that you're only actually going to be chayav for Nezekin if you actually were damaged.
Right, so I think the answer there is that you basically pay back the Nezek by the thing being whole. I was saying on Tuesday that that's like a calculation of damage issue. So it's like, well, how much is the guy out of pocket? Well, $0. So yes, you're chayiv, but like instead of being chayiv $10, you're chayiv $0. Because like there's no material loss to repair. So, and that's an issue of the amount of the calculation of damages, not about whether there in fact is nezek that you're obligated to pay for, that you're liable for. or as Cole would say, that you're culpable for. You see that, Yoni?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I have to think about it.
I think it becomes much more clear in the next source when, like, you see there's an alchemy between being a Mazik, even though no monetary harm has happened yet. Exactly. There's a significance to the status of being labeled, okay, at this point, at time T0, you are a Mazik, even though nothing happened.
So one way of trying to tease out this idea is like to show that there's a shame Mazik that's significant, separate from the calculation of damages question. And one natural place to go for that is like the Isser Lahazik, right? Is there some significance of like having violated the Isser Nezek, or separate from the Isser, is there some legal significance to being a Mazik before the material collision of atoms, you know, material destruction occurs? Yeah, so that's what I think is great about this source. Bava Kama Chevra should remember this fondly. If Cole were here, he'd like roll his eyes that, you know, I've exploited this Rambam to my gain ad nauseum. Now, I've gotten a lot out of this Rambam. It's the gift that keeps giving.
Maybe there's just a lot in the Rambam.
Yeah, I agree. So the Rambam Niskim Amun Hey Aleph says, Zachary, why don't you take us through the Rambam here?
Sure. So, Behemah Shaisa Roa, who Parsha Vehech Nifnasa Besalus of Akramim. So someone's animals get loose and they're in some other people's fields. Alvapi Sha'adayin Lo Hizika, even though the animal has not yet damaged and hasn't yet eaten the crops yet. Masrin Baba'ala Shloshapanim. We warn the animal owners three times. Imlo Shamar Behemdel, Velo Mana Milirot. Yesh Rishus Labala Sunda, Lishchot Osa Shchita Ksher. And if the animal owner does not guard his animal and he doesn't stop it from grazing in other people's fields, the field owner has the permission to shech the animal with a kosher shechita. Bo umachru basar shalachem. Says, oh, come pick up your meat and you can sell it to get some money back. Mibnei. So why is he allowed to shecht someone else's animal? Because it is forbidden for anyone, but in particular the animal owner, to damage and then to pay back what he damaged. And even to cause nezek is forbidden.
Yeah. So what's the problem with this Rambam, or what bothers like people about this Rambam? Well, look, obviously the Rambam here is stating a self-help rule, right? You have kind of maybe you don't have to get into that, but it's a self-help rule where the guy's cattle has been trespassing over your property. That's the beginning. Behema shahaisarua besadus of akramim. So these are trespassing animals. Whoops. These are trespassing animals. There's no material harm yet, but you warn the guy. So you have a right to preemptively seize his animals. Obviously, there's a mitigation requirement. You can't just like throw them in the garbage bin. You gotta do shechita ksheira so that he can maximize his buck from your self-help. So you can't cause him an extra loss. Now, the issue is, what triggers the self-help right? Right? What gives you the right to preemptively seize his animals in this case? So, Gabe, what do you think the right here is?
Yeah, not the Nezek. Meaning there's no Nezek yet. So it's the violation of the Baal Hasada's property rights.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I think the right thing to say here is exactly as Gabe said, that there's a kind of Shia of the Baalim that generates a shame Nezek with respect to this, Mipnesha Asr Lahazik. So the idea is that like he's already in violation of some nezek. He's already been poshea with respect to the nezek. And that's what entitles the owner, the balakarka, to seize the cattle. You see, the problem with the Rambam that bothers Mefarshim is, okay, grant, but Mesha Asala the Mahazik Loshalim Masha Hizik, but there's no nezek yet. So if there's really no Nezek yet, then this is all true, but how does it explain the preemptive right of the owner to seize the stuff, right? everything the Rambam said here is correct, but it doesn't explain the din. Like, what's the mipnei? So my answer is that there is nezek through the pshia, and that's what the Rambam means in this last line. He was mazik the baal ha karka through being posheya and not guarding his animals and allowing them to trespass. And that nezek, that shame nezek, generates the self-help right of the baal karka. Now, I should note, if I were the Rambam, I think I would have been a little more cautious than like the words that I used here, because I think he's using, on my read, it sounds like he's using nezek in two different senses. So like up here, afal pi she'adayin lo hizika, the Rambam is using nezek in like the physical sense, arguably. So like even though there's no consumption of crops yet, but then later when he says mipnei she'asur la demahazik u'lashalei ma'asha hizik, he's using it in the normative sense of the violation of property rights. That's one way of just, okay, the Rambam is using nezek in two different senses. That's totally fine. Can't expect the Rambam to have solved everything. But there's another way to read this, I would just say. And that is, when he's talking about afal pi she'adayin lo hizika, he's talking about like before hasra, right? So it's like the first time, then your masra, that's chronologically prior to masim b'baila shlosha parmim. And then you might say, well, once like it's egregious, then it's like a pshia that rises to the level of mazik, right? So, you know, the first time, maybe it wasn't like any real pshia. It was just like he lowered his guard once. Maybe that's not enough to generate a shame nezek. Oh, but if he's not watching it and there's hasra three times, then that rises to the level of pushia kemazik. See, I think that's fine, because that just means that it's not the case that every little pshia will be like nezek. It's got to be an egregious type of pshia, which I think is totally fine. I mean, that could sit well with the makoros, in which case I can explain that use of al pi she'adayin lo hizika even in the normative sense. Right? The Rambam is not using nezek in two different senses. Even in the beginning, he's using it in the normative sense. Just prior to the three hasaros, we don't view this as being the right type of pshia kemazik. So we got a hand from Zolti, and then we have a hand from Gabe. Sorry, Zolti. You want to give
it? Why didn't the Rambam write that then?
What?
Like this whole, like the Rambam doesn't write any of this. Like that's not what he writes. Like I forget whether like the word hizika is like changing the definition. Like okay. Even forget that problem. Like there's like Rambam knows to write Poshea Kemazik. He writes it other places. So he should have mentioned that here, if that's like the main thrust of his theory. And not only that, but why mention Fishrasu Ladmazik?
First of all, you're asking a question like you're like a brisker Talmud over here. It's like what's the Rambam teaching us? The Rambam's teaching us like Lamdisha Dinim. So how come the Rambam didn't just tell us the Lamdisha Din?
No, but it's not. No, you can't. No, he's telling us. You don't really have to expect the Rambam to teach you like the whole Rav Chaim, but you do expect him to like gesture towards it, not to like.
He is. What do you mean? Look at this. Mipnei she'asur la'adam
l'hazik. But that's not. But why, first of all, why mention l'shalem ma'asha hizik? According to your theory, it doesn't make a difference whether you have to pay for it or not. He already was mazik, so he should have said mipnei she'asur la'adam l'hazik. Period. And stop. Maybe you can add the grum. I feel the grum, but it's not about because like. The language about being mazik and paying for it sounds like it's preemptive. Sounds like it's like, oh, you're about to not be mazik and you're going to pay for it and everything is good and dandy. And that's why, because that's forbidden, therefore we have to preemptively prevent you from doing that. Why mention l'shalem ma'asha hizik? It gives it gives the wrong perception of what his intention is.
Why is it giving the wrong perception?
Because it suggests that you haven't been mazik yet.
No. See, the way I read this is that you could have said that the Baal HaKarka has no legal recourse because so long as a mazik pays damages, the nizak's rights have not been violated. That's what you might have thought. So the self-help rule would be incoherent or not justified if the Torah gave permission to a mazik lahazik ulashale masha hizik. Do you see that? Like, you wouldn't have this self-help that's analogous to like injunctive relief were it to be the case that so long as restitution is paid, you're back to the status quo ante.
I still feel like it's not just like, oh, the Rambam, like, language isn't always clear. Like, I think you should have mentioned that you already were mazik in some way.
He does. It says, Mesha also has a mazik.
No, that's just like a rule. At the very most, it's a rule. It's not even a statement about he already was nezik. That he hasn't said it already has happened. At the very least, you have to agree it's just like a general statement. In my reading, it's probably more preventative, or a statement about the future, but it's, you know, at the very least, it's just like a
the talk. Way you read it, this is like Kol Yisrael Arev Him Zebazeh. It's like, I need to help him not violate his Isser of Isser Lahazik. That's what you're saying? That's what it is?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a pretty bad Svara. Like, it doesn't really make any sense. Like, whenever else we like, say this, but
it's like, why are you allowed to kill a Rodev? Because, like, you have a mitzvah lahatzilo from violating the Avera of Ritzicha. That's how you read this, Yoni?
I think that's a standard way, and, like, it's not a good Svara, but, like, I think that's probably the best way to read it.
Okay. But my way, like, you know, you get this really interesting idea of,
yeah, your way is conceptually very nice, but it doesn't work. To quote, like, I think with a Kutzker Rebbe, there's Emet and there's Yafeh, but there's 15 words between Emet v'yafti v'nachom nekayem until you get to Yafeh, and there's a lot of distance between Yafeh and Emet.
It's true. I would just say the Kutzker probably said it with a Havara Ashkenazis, no?
Well, probably Hasidic, but yeah.
Right. Fair enough. So you're saying this is Yafeh but not MS? Is that your...
In the Rambam, yeah.
I don't know. I don't see anything barring it from being the right interpretation of the Rambam. Yakir, what do you think? You're usually the arbiter of MS things. You know, we appeal to Cole for aesthetics. He's the Yafeh guy. But Yakir, we appeal to you as the mathematician here for what's the MS here in the Rambam?
I'm enjoying the back and forth. I don't know if I'm going to take a stand on at this stage.
You don't have a Natiya?
I feel like my reading of the Rambam has been too unduly influenced by the way you've been reading it since the first time we brought it up.
So. But given the undue influence, what's your sense?
Giving undue influence, I'm with you.
Okay, good. There we go.
Can I ask one question? I think supports, you know, I'm probably going to have to run shortly
sure,
after.
Go for it,
so if we boil it down to just the pure property right infringement, and that's the poche. So let's say I have some carnivorous animal that doesn't eat, grass. So my wolf or whatever, my wolf has trespassed on your property a number of times. If it's pure sort of Shia property right infringement, which we could call nezek, then it seems like you're like, yeah, I can kill that wolf, sell it, and kill the wolf to because of your pshia. Like the nezek has, for some intent, happened already. So, and which doesn't seem considered, like the fact, like I think that it's like some sort of risk exposure that's the issue here, more so than the property right infringement, which I think
I think you could read. I'm not reading Poshea as like a pure property right infringement, like, oh, like the boundary invasion. That's not how I read the Poshea here. Mm-hmm. It's the risk of the boundary thing is because it leads to achila or, you know, shein and abregel and stuff like that.
So, but I think that's more noted, or to Yoni's idea of like preventative, like risk, the risk of nezek is clearly like it's risk of nezek that hasn't happened yet. So at a certain point, the risk boundary is passed, at which point, like the rights of the bar, I have to run, but I'm sorry to kiss and tell or whatever we call it. But
wait, before you run it, then hear my answer. On both formulations of risk, my point is that the future risk creates a present wrong, right? That's what the Rambam is getting at in the last. The way Yoni reads it is that the future risk creates a potential future wrong. That's the difference. Okay, good luck with your negotiation.
I hope I'll be back soon.
Yeah. Gabe, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to offer a deal which maybe moves in your direction, but I'm focusing
by
on...
By all means, make it.
But focusing on a different clause than the one you underlined. I was wondering, I don't love your reading of the word Nezek, but I want to focus on a few of Grumma Nezek Aster. Wondering whether Grumma here might not mean like the causing of Nezek, but creating a scenario in which Nezek can be caused, which might sound like your definition of Sheen.
Yes, I like that. See, I think if you focus on this last phrase, then you would say, Ligrom HaNezek, so semantically, the word Nezek still picks out the collision of molecules, right? Or the consumption, but the normative wrongdoing is still the creation of risk, right? Setting the groundwork for that, which is the Pshia. I think that's a very nice, so you move away from the, what's the Nezek translation, but you still get the normative point that Poshea is Mazeku through creating the risk of stuff like that. Is that right, Gabe? Yeah, that sounds good. Ah, Zolti likes Gabe's reading a lot. Great. Zachary, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, first of all, I like Gabe's reading a little bit more, but maybe that's just like a political thing. I'm very wary of anyone saying X is violence or X is harm when X does not equal the word harm, but that might be a separate point. I think like a good like intuition.
You know that Bertrand Russell pointed out that is not always the is of identity, right? There's like the is of predication, and the is of identity is only one usage of is, but go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, people don't even like know like the use mention chiluk. Like, there's a lot of things that people just like. It's, I think you're giving too much justification. Anyway, back to the point here. So I think like a useful conception is the timeline. As in, I think if you start at the end, as in, if someone is on your property actively doing damage, the animal's currently eating your food. I think it would be much more reasonable to say, okay, obviously I don't have to just stand here and take it. I can get rid of him, right? You can say it's happened. It started then. You go back one step. Let's say, you know, it started trying to pull something off of your tree, but it hasn't yet succeeded. So it doesn't hasn't caused any monetary harm, but you can say, so to speak, a mycenezic is in play. It's very reasonable at that point to say as well, like, I don't have to stand for this. I don't have to sit by and watch this happen. I think our argument here is the step immediately prior to that is also under that same umbrella, as in the step where it's walking towards my tree, eyeing it suspiciously, I don't have to stand for that either. Again, that's kind of just like a less sophisticated version of what Gabe was saying, maybe, but...
Right. I mean, the way... Is that different from my formulation of it's like when the risk... Like there's like a certain threshold of risk that's created, that's when the Nezek occurs. So what does it mean a certain threshold of risk is created? I'm sure you could probably put it into like a probability form, right? So it's like, yeah, the animals keep trespassing, right? So it's like, now there's a certain elevated risk. The owner is responsible for that risk because he's Poshea and his Shmira. So he's the risk creator. That's the Nezek, right? So like, take an example of driving on the highway. So the example that I gave last time was texting and driving, right? When you look down from the wheel and start texting your friend on the phone, you impose risks on nearby drivers, right? Because someone texting now, there's much greater probability, frequency, at least there's a greater frequency, a higher frequency of collision. So you're imposing risks on others. And that's a type of wrong. You don't have to wait for, the fenders to collide to say that you've wronged them or that you've harmed them. The argument here is that there's some nezek from the imposition of risk. Okay.
Yeah, one kind of other small point. I think if you read it like Yoni was suggesting, read the Rambam, the Rambam, there's still a gap in the Rambam. The Rambam is missing a final clause. As in he's saying, if such a case is happening, you can shecht it because it's usur to cause hezek. There's still, since it's usur to cause hezek, you can take this action. There still is a something missing in the Rambam that, like, you have to admit, like, whether you fill that with something brisker or something not, there's something you have to fill in here in this Rambam, because he doesn't give the full explanation. He doesn't tie it back for you. So I think exactly. It's perfectly legitimate to put in Hoshea Kamazik, to put in something else, because he's laying the principle and he's not explaining how it connects to the Shechita.
So, I agree. I mean,
that's a very fair move here.
Yeah, that's what motivates my read, right? So it's like,
yeah.
Rambam, how did you even get to Asaladim Lahazik here? As like, that's supposed to explain the ruling of the self-help principle. No Nezek has occurred yet, right? So like, how is this relevant? So the answer is like, no, it sounds like, yeah, I agree. You have to fill this thing in and this is the explanation.
Yeah.
Right. So let's move to, I want to just look at a few other sources that bolster this main idea. Here we have the Ramban in Kuntras, Dina de Garmi. We had seen this Ramban earlier in the year to talk about Nezikin halachos, Choshim Mishpat halachos that are really grounded in Gemilas Chasadim. Remember in the context of Schus Achilas Poa Mishel Balabayis, is that a Mishalom, Mishel Shemaim? Is that a Gemilas Chasadim halacha? Is it a bona fide claim right? So just wanted to, it's really just the formulation of the Ramban and the Garmi that's exciting. The Gemara says that if you have a mechita sakerim shenifritza, and there's so your property abuts the property of a wheat owner, and you own a vineyard, there's supposed to be a wall in between. The wall falls down and you're nisiyayish from rebuilding it, which is a kind of pshia because that allows the vines to now grow into the wheat field, which will create kalayim. Does this sound reasonably familiar? Yeah, okay. So the Ramban says that since you're obligated to build the wall and you didn't, you're chayiv. Shaharehu maziko biyiusho. I think this is like a really great formulation. So it's like, you're giving up on building the wall. Your omission from constructing the wall is mazik, your neighbor. So what do you make of that formulation? Here it's literally just like the words that stand out. Right? It's your yish that harms the neighbor. Now you might have said, like, no, it's not the yish. It's the literally like the gefanim that go ahead and create the nezek, right? Or it's the yisr later that creates the nezek. But here the Ramban seems to pack the shame nezek into the yish, which is the equivalent of the pshia. All right. Thoughts on this or sound good? Fair diuk? Okay. Let me just make another diuk here. This is the Rabbah Torah we saw in the Bava Kamma years. Kiloyis chai ba'adam b'nizkei mamono shehizik el memnei shehu poshea bishmiraso. And you can read this into the Mishnah and Daf Yud. There's not so much going on here, but it certainly prioritizes the pshia and the shmira as a cause of nezek, as like the mechayiv of nezek. I do think it's important, though, to distinguish the Poshea Kemazek theory from like the lack of Shmira theory of Nizkei Ma'amon. I'll talk about that separately. I don't want to get dragged into that right now. So I'm going to skip here to Nizkei Ma'amon Bava Kamma. This is really the third.
Well, you have to be careful with like the Rabag is a good example, is that even though you say like you're chayiv through Poshea, it doesn't mean necessarily what you mean, which is that like the exposure to risk is itself the nezek. What could you just saying is that you're liable because that's like that pshia, that negligence, which ends up leading to the actual nezek, ties you to it and leads you to responsible.
I agree. Yeah, that's why I'm moving away from that, Rabag, very quickly. I'm running away from it. I agree. That formulation is not enough to make the point that I want to make. It's not like the Ramban's of Maziko Biyusho, right, Yoni?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think this source is really awesome. I mentioned this very quickly in my response to Shua on Tuesday. Did anybody get a chance to look at this great sigya? Donnie, you remember it anyway, right? Because it's like Kisvei Maluach Libecha. You have Bava Kamma engraved on your soul. So
a bit much, but yeah.
No, this is like you said, didn't you say you had dinner with one
lunch? But yeah, yes, so sure, right. Sure.
Right. So this Gemara, I think, is really, really helpful for us. So look, and it's the Gemara and the Kikayo Diona. So the Gemara says you have to pay from your best assets, right? Meitav. And Rabbi Shmuel interprets that to mean, at least in the Havamina of the Gemara here, it doesn't get kept all the way through, but Rabbi Shmuel takes it to mean, the Gemara here says, when you evaluate Meitav, is it Bishalo Hein Shaman or Bishal Olam Hein Shaman? And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Shmuel's idea that according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's B'dinizak Shaiminan, meaning the Mazik pays from the best at the type of assets. Like you look at the best assets that the Mizak has, and that's the type of thing that the Mazak has to pay. Everybody good with that? Rabbi Shmuel sheet that. Now, the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel, Achal Shmina Mishalim Shmina. If the animal trespassed and the animal consumed like really nice vegetables, like fully ripe and produced vegetables, it's mistaver that you should have to pay in kind. But achal kusha mashalim shmeina. Why in the world, if the animal actually consumed poor produce, like shriveled or not fully ripe produce, why should you have to pay awesome produce? That's the question. Is everybody on board for the question? Oh. So Tosfos here has an interesting comment. He says, blah, blah, blah. The Gemara's point is, don't worry about the logic, but like, you should never really obligate somebody to pay more than the actual damage. Okay. So what's the Havamina here? So you get this really great Kikayon Diona, who I think really taps into the idea of Poshea Kemazik. Did anybody get a chance to look at this, Kikayon Diona?
So, who is this?
Who's the Kikayon Diona? Gotta Google him.
Is that the name of Robert Reese's book?
No, he's the Kanfei Yona. So look what he says. Uvelimud hayeshiva amarti shalule divrehem. So he wants to kind of give a different theory than Tosas to what's going on. And he says this. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Here. Yeshlomar tam hakasuv demisha sholeach be'iro l'sade acher. Somebody lets his animal go into somebody else's property. Upasha v'lo shamar. Right, so you breach your duty of Shmira. Shalo leilech v'yazik. So you didn't watch the animal. Yishalim ha-metav. So you should pay the metav of the nizak. Shaharei yochol lahazik ha-metav. V'kansinan ki'ilu achal ha-metav. What do you think?
Don't you want to say a lot more than this?
I do. But this, you got to take what you can get, right?
I mean, so, you want to say it's not just a knas. You want to say that he actually damaged the meitav.
Well, yeah, this is just a suggestion of the Gemara here, right? So what he's suggesting is that the logic of this proposal is when you're poshea, look, the animal just as well could have eaten the best produce in the field. So let's say you have a field. It's got the mega peppers. It's got organic peppers that sell for $100 a pound. And then it has like the pesticide produced stuff, and that goes for $50 a pound. The animal just as well, once you breach your duty, you expose both of those produces to risk, right? You let your animal go loose in the Whole Foods. The animal could eat from the organic food section or from the non-organic food section. And it's like an arbitrary, it's like almost like luck as to like which it ends up consuming from. So he's saying, at least at the Knas level, since Hare Yachal Lahazek Hametav, it's reasonable that we should concede on you Ki'ilu Achal Hametav. Which I think is such a like such an insightful point that, and to my mind, that comes close to the Poshea Kemazek theory, right? So for me, the Poshea Kemazek point is that at least on some normative level, you were mazik the things that you exposed to risk. And so it's not a far jump to go from this suggestion here to say, well, that's the Gemara's proposal. The poshea owner of the animal exposed the whole sladet to risk. So it's not crazy to make him pay for even the better produce. Now, the Maskana, when the Gemara rejects this, that's totally fine for me because the Gemara is not rejecting the suggestion of Poshea Kemazek. It's just saying that when we calculate the damages, we calculate actual losses, not like, so like there's a gap between, as I said in response to Yoni at the outset, between the Tashlumin question, the measure of damages, and the Maisa Nezek. The Havamina here is to tailor the damages, the Tashlumim, to the Maisa Nezek as well. That's how I would read this. Shmuel, you have a hand on this.
No, you just answered it with sort of that last point.
Oh, Baruch Shekivanti. Good. Great. You have any thoughts on this, guys? Pretty great Kikayim Diona, right? It's like one of those things. Like even if you just had this Kiddush, this one suggestion, it makes like the whole Sefer that you wrote worthwhile. Great. Okay.
Maybe just like actually like... it's worth asking, like, how actually, like, unconventional is the view that Shia is against the objects you're about to damage? As in, is it really, like, the conventional view that, oh, Shia is just on the animal in a vacuum, you have been negligent with your ownership, it's just about you and your property, and you're Poshea, and things might happen, things might not happen. As in, is there any Shia on a desert island, so to speak? Like, do we identify Shia as only relate to results and to the external objects? I'm just like kind of thinking like, what is the typical conception? Is this even a question that we normally ask?
Oh, so I'm so happy Zacharia said that. Does everybody see Zacharia's question? Does everybody understand?
Zacharia's... I asked like seven kind of confused questions, but we can pick on one of them.
Yeah, so why don't you just reformulate the main idea for us?
So the Kikayon Diona seems to be saying, we frame Shia in Nezikin cases as a Shia against, as in your poshea with your animal against something. And I was wondering, in other areas of Nezikin and in Shomrim, do we typically view Shia as a Shia against or a Shia of the animal?
I'm very happy you said that. See, remember I said a few moments ago that we should distinguish the poshea kemazik theory from the whole Mahalach and the Achronim that Nizkei Mamon is all about lack of Shemira, right? So one of the primary differences between the two things, you might say, oh, there's a similarity, right? Both focus on Shia as significant, right? I think the crucial difference is that Poshea Kemazik has a victim. A Mazik, you, I expose you to risk. And that's like being mazik you in the same way that Maisa Nezek has a targeted victim, intentional or unintentional, right? There's a recipient of the Nezek. Or as in jurisprudence, they would say, there's like a juridical relationship between a mazik and a nizak, plaintiff and a defendant, right? Whereas for the standard view in the Achronim about, oh, Nizkei Mamon is about lack of Shmira, it's not about a Maisa Nezek that I was mazik youth in my lack of shmira. What they mean is almost like a public policy thing that we hold you liable for like not doing your duty as a citizen to keep your animal on a leash. And so it's not that like by failing to watch your animal, you've exposed particular nizaks and now they're considered a nizak. The point is rather, I think of the standard view in the Achronim is that, look, there's some Shia as like a public policy or as like a public law rule, right? And separately, there's a Maisa, there's like a nizak who was harmed by the goring. But not that the Shia connects to the, I wasn't like Poshea Klape the Nizak. Yeah, so that's the way I conceptualize the difference between the two theories. Thoughts on that, guys? That was very helpful. Gabe, looks like you have a thought on this. It's all good? Great. Danny, I saw a hand going up before and then it came down. You're just like massaging your COVID shot? Is that the...
No, just stretching.
Got it.
Kink in my shoulder.
Got it. All right, good. This is helpful. So let me say a little more about, let me try to motivate this a little further. I have two more mukoros that I want to touch quickly. So one is the Gemara in Bava Kamma. I think next is the Gemara Bava Kamma Yud Zayin. This is a pretty involved sugya for other reasons, but I want to pull out one kernel from this discussion. The Gemara wants to know, basar meikara as linan, or basar tava mana as linan. So in this context, it's a question of niske regel. So you have an animal that tramples on a kli. It doesn't break. The kli rolls to somewhere else and breaks. Okay. So do we say basar meikara and follow the original act? Okay. The original act would make it a case of regel. How much are you chayim for regel?
Nezek shalim.
Yeah, nezek shalim, right? Exactly. Odilma basar tavar manaz linan, or do you say like the critical moment is when the kli broke, not when like the animal kicked it, vitzruos to do. In which case, like when it broke, if that's the crucial time, then it's not regel, it's really tzruos, like an animal that kicks up a pebble. In which case, you'll be chatzineza. So that's not so enlightening for us. But what's helpful for us is the next part of the Gemara. Tifsho le midiraba, this suffix of basar tavar mana or basar meikara, or like meikara versus levasof, we could decide from the following case. Amaraba zara kli merosh agag, uba acher v'shiro b'makol pater. So a famous case, one guy throws the kli off the roof, somebody else comes and smashes it. The smasher, from the standard reading of the Gemara, is pater. The thrower is chayev. Why? Taminalei mana tvira tavar. The smasher broke a kli that was already broken. And for most Rishonim, this shows that at least for Rabba, basar meikara aslinan. We follow the meikara, like the first thing. Okay. You can see Rashi here says, pater hamishabro, v'chay bazorek, alma basar meikara aslinan. Why? Hoel v'sofo lishaber, l'chishe yenuach, k'misha shabro hu dami. So the first guy did an act that was completely sufficient to destroy the kli. So here's the interesting question. You have a cause and effect. So like in terms of the collision of molecules, who broke the kli? What do you want to say to that? Shmuel, who's the cause and effect?
I mean, the second guy.
Yeah, I agree, right? I think that's the right thing to say. Now, if you're thinking in terms of causes, like the cause and fact, who actually broke the thing apart, it's the second guy. What the first guy did, though, was an act, the way I would put it, that like created the risks of destruction, right? He basically, the object was sitting on the roof. It was totally fine. The first guy did an action that puts the object into a really risky position, right? It's like floating through the air now, and there's like a probability of close to one that it's going to be destroyed. Okay. Everybody with me on that so far? Now, the Rush says, and a lot of Rishonim say, or let's look at the Rush's formulation. It's a little more delicate. The Sheni's Pater, the Rishon's Chayiv, Debasar Mei Karas Linon, Mechol Shezarko Mei Rosh Agag, V'roi Lishaver, Harehu Kilu Vishbar. So what we're doing here is we're saying that, you know, the fact that the first guy made it Ra'i Lishaver is a reason to hold him liable even against the second guy who's a cause and fact. Does everybody see that? So I think, and this is not perfect, but I think this leads in the direction of the Poshea Kemazik argument, because what's significant about saying Basame Karas Linon is that the first guy created the relevant risks. And that's more significant in terms of identifying a Shane Mazik than the guy who smashed the molecules. That's what I think we could take away from this Gemara. I agree that it's not perfect because it's not just a Poshea case. It's like it's like the risk or the probability moves close to one, right? That's why I like this formulation of the Rashba, where he just says Ra'li Lishaver, as opposed to like the Rashba says Kivin Devada Yishaver Chashiv Kishavor Mishasriga. But I think I agree that there are ways, easy ways, to pull this sugya out of our discussion. But the question is there enough here to put it in our discussion? So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. Looks like Gabe, you had a thought on that.
Yeah, I'm in the camp of I'm hesitant to put this in our discussion. I think, like, forget the Rashba's language, but the Gemara's language, Humana Tvira Tavar, indicates, so it sounds a lot like the Rosh, which is that it's already considered Nishvar or Shavur before it's broken.
So like the second guy broke something that's broken. Well, I would just say that, like, why is the second guy breaking something that's broken? It's not broken yet. So if that cares about molecules, like, are the molecules still bonded? So we do like the chemical analysis, right? We pull in the chemist and we see like the electrons still bonded to each other. And we say, oh, the mazik is the guy who breaks the electron bond, right? That's like, if you care about, if nezek means that, then I would say like, that's what's really significant. The fact that the Gemara is willing to say that the guy who creates the risks made it into a mona shavar, that seems to show that the normative wrongness of risk exposure is like just as significant for Shem Nezek. That's how I would read it. I understand. You're saying it's more of like a metaphysical issue of if I make it the case with high probability that it's going to break, then legally I'm viewed as breaking the molecules, right? My reading of the Gemara is a different read. I agree that you could read the Gemara your way. My read is to say that Mana Tvira Tavar is like a normative description rather than just like the metaphysical move from, oh, you set it in motion. So it's as if you like broke the chemical bonds. So the way I read it is that the wrongness of exposing it to risks is as egregious as, it's like morally as egregious as breaking the bonds. That's how I read it. Shmuel, you have a hand with this?
Yeah, I think it's similar to Gabe was saying, and maybe I need to let the language of the Rashba similar simmer a little more. But if you go down the very end of the line, which you underlined, ki'ilu nishbar, it doesn't seem like he's chayv on the risk exposure. It seems like he's doing it as the risk exposure being breaking. I don't know if that makes any sense. As breaking
molecules. Yeah, I hear that. It's like the metaphysical thing that I was saying. It's just that once you set the ball in motion for it to break, so that you broke it.
Right, but it's not the fact that you set it in motion. It's the fact that you broke it. Yeah.
I hear that. It's like a general kolo omeid leos ke'asoi dami. Right, that's how you're reading it. Yeah, I hear. So I agree that you could definitely pull this Gemara out of the discussion. Interested if anybody else is somewhat sympathetic to putting it in the discussion. Zolt?
Yeah, I actually do like your reading of the Rashba, especially in contrast to the Rush.
Ah. So excited.
Here's my question that was kind of the reverse. Like, how far do we take this? As in, let's say, to give an different example, like, do we apply this principle of, like, you know, that the secondary person is always me putter? Like, let's say, right, like, I own a field, and you own, like, the neighboring field, and you let your sheep graze wildly, and in theory, they could come and, you know, they could come, and you've exposed me to risk, because my produce can now be, like, trampled on by your flocks. But nothing happens from your flocks. Instead, someone else's, like a different neighbor, comes in and his flock come and destroy my field. So now is he putter because I've already been exposed to risk?
I think there's an argument to be made. Based off this sugya here, that if the risk of the first guy hits a certain threshold, then it could shield the second guy from liability. I think there's a, isn't that what this
Gemara? You really that's wild that, like, the fact that I'm exposed to risk, even if, like, the party involved ends up not damaging me in any actual, you know, sense, I'm just exposed to the risk that anybody else is putter.
You're just upset with this Gemara. That's what this Gemara says.
Okay,
a guy with an aluminum bat at the bottom.
No, but the guy, aluminum bat is putter, but the guy who threw the kli off the roof is still chayav. Someone is chayav.
Right.
In the case I gave, is anyone chayav? Well, you tell me the person who exposed, because you exposed me to risk to begin with. Now you're chayav, even though, like, some random person from the street is the one that actually damaged.
Right. Well, I could hear an argument that says, well, tashlumin has to come from somewhere. And I think the right thing to say in my case is that, the right thing to say in my case is to hold the first guy liable, even though the cause and fact is the second guy. Right? That's how I would deal with your case. So if the first guy's actions are sufficiently egregious, right? Like, his animals are on their way to consume your field. Right? They see the destination, like, they see the food, they're going there, and then just someone else's dog, like, runs and outpaces them. There's an argument to say that first guy is chayav. So let's do this case like this, okay? Jared has a field. Jared, what do you plant in your field?
We'll go for grapes. Okay. Oh, there's no grapes in fields.
It's a vineyard. It's a vineyard.
Vineyard, yeah.
Jared's got a vineyard, and I'm walking my dog, and my dog sees the grapes in Jared's vineyard. It breaks off its leash, starts running. Okay. Now, Yoni, you're walking nearby, and you have a cheetah as a pet. And your cheetah, after seeing my dog run towards the grapes, decides that no way it's going to let my dog get them. So it outpaces my dog, but it leaves after my dog already broke its leash, right?
Well, make the case even better. Let's say, like, I see your dog run. I'm like, oh, cheetah, now I know me putter. Let me let my cheetah go intentionally to eat the grapes.
Gerecht, right. I think that's right.
So that's the case. That's the case here.
That's like the case here, right? That's like the Monatvira Tavar case. So the point is, so the argument is that, like, the wrongdoing, the risk exposure was by the first guy. And the second guy just hopped in on the party. But who's like the guy who created the wrongdoing? Arguably the first guy. Look, there are Rishonim who are upset with this reading of the Gemara. I think the Ramban says can't be that the first guy's Chayav and the second guy's Potter, and he rereads the whole Gemara here, the Ramban and the Mechamos. But once you have the Chiddush of the Gemara here, that's right. You're moving away from the cause and fact being liable to the person who created the real risk being liable. Now, I should say that more precisely because I get it. On Shmuel's reading and on, I think it was Gabe's reading, the right thing to say is that maybe the true cause and fact is the first actor. Because like the metaphysics, the Chiddush and metaphysics that to put the thing in motion is as if you achieve the result, right? So who's the cause and fact, the bat swinger or the thrower? And I guess Gabe wants to say it's the thrower, right? The way I read the Gemara is like, no. Everybody agrees the bat swinger is the cause and fact, but the person who's like the normative Nezek doer is the thrower because he's the one who created the risk. Somebody see that? Zolt, you see that?
I think it's like the logical extension, but I think it's still I think it's cool but wild.
Okay, great. So where does that fall in the MS Yatza V'Nachon spectrum?
Definitely a lot closer to Yafa than Emmet, I think.
Adin, you have a hand on this, Adin?
Yeah, sorry. I think at least within, I got here to hear Yoni's, in his mind, impossible hypothetical. And I think a distinction could be drawn to like save Itamar from that, from the conclusion that the dog owner is Chayav, which is that in the throwing it off the roof case, we could argue there's a distinction, whether it's in terms of statistics or metaphysics of like the passive passage of gravity versus the still, even though animals are not human beings, but the animal can choose to not eat. Like the dog could have at some point before, at any moment up until time equals grapes in dog's mouth, the dog could have stopped. Whereas like gravity couldn't have it. We could view that like to say, you can't really say mana tvira tavar on something that requires a more active choice for it to happen than on like a passive passage of time or something like
right.
that.
Right. I think basically your point says that the Gemara is about the metaphysics of causation or the metaphysics, right? Once you start something, if the probability is close to one, then, or if it's just happened by default, then we view it as having been done. Kala omed lasos kasoi dami.
Yeah.
Rather than the way I'm explaining it as, no, like the wrongdoer is the first guy, and the second guy just sneaks in, like he's cloaked by the first guy's wrongdoing. That's the.
So I think you can say that, but just say, but so Yoni's case of dog and cheetah is that the threshold of you're only considered it's only considered true wrongdoing if the action achieves a sufficient likelihood of a sufficient fate, like not infallibility, a sufficient like fatalism, whatever word I'm looking for, like that defines you as a wrongdoer, even though the Nezek hasn't actually happened yet. Whereas like,
there's a probabilistic threshold that has to be met.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I hear that.
But it certainly can't be the same extent as like the probability of throwing a kli off a roof. So I think Itamar's trying to extend it beyond that because that's almost. I mean, it may not be perfect, but it's very close to one.
Correct.
Like Itamar's only trying to extend it, that exposure to, otherwise there's no chiddush what you're saying. Like there's got to be the exposure to risk has got to be a probability much lower than that. Maybe it's not Pfizer. Maybe it's only Johnson.
Right. Or the Sputnik, whatever that is. Okay, Donnie, I think has a hand on this. Donnie, have a hand?
Yeah, kind of adding on to Adina, might be a question on him. What if you had a case of someone throwing off the object on the roof, and but there's only like a 50% chance it actually breaks?
Yeah.
That's not the same case in the Gemara. But like if there are pillows there, and then I move the pillows, that's right. It's been a while since I've seen Bava Kama, but like that's Pashut that I'm Chayav, right? Like if Ithamar throws it off onto them and there's a pillow down there and then I move it, like we don't say Manatavir Tavar, like there's a prop, like, yes, there's always a chance that it could bounce off the pillow in a certain way or the pillow is not sufficiently, but like we say that,
I think it's a complicated grammar question there actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
But certainly the thrower is not chayav, right?
I think that's right. But that's because I think the probability of, I think the point is that if, like, the Gemara doesn't get into the risk analysis. The Gemara doesn't tell us, oh, assuming the pillows are there, like, the risk is, like, the Gemara might just assume the risk is zero, right? The assumption is if the mattress is going to catch it, it's not going to break. So it's more interesting when you get, like, into the numbers and you're like, oh, the first guy, by texting on my phone, I create, like, in the Rambam's case, right? Let's just go back to the Rambam's case. What's the probability that you have an animal that's trespassing, what's the probability here? And he says, "Afi shadayin lo hezika," right? So it hasn't done anything wrong yet. What's the probability that a grazing animal is actually going to eat in your field, right? I mean, it's just that's really this question. Certainly not one. At least there's no reason to assume it's one, right? So there's got to be some threshold cutoff. Shmuel, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, in terms of making distinctions between like the Gemara case and the more extreme case, another thought that comes to mind is sort of intent. In the Gemara case, it seems like there's intent that like the guy's throwing it off the roof, and like the guy who comes around and swings the baseball bat, he sees, oh, clearly like we don't care about this vessel anymore, so might as well have some fun with it. In this extreme case, like the guy was poshea clearly by letting his dog sort of get loose, but doesn't seem like there's intent. And especially to say that the second guy intentionally lets his cheetah off the leash to go steal the grape, which is going to be eaten anyways. It seems like there's not a direct link.
Okay, I think that's a great point. I think that's a great point. My response is that I think it's too good of a point. Meaning it sounds like what you're saying is that this Gemara is about intentional torts versus, you know, some guy saying, look, the thing is going to be destroyed. Let it not be for waste, right? Let me get some good batting practice out of it. So you're saying, oh, that's why the Gemara makes the first guy liable, right? Because he acted intentionally and the second guy was kind of just recognized that this thing is broken anyway. That's your view. But I think when you look at the Gemara doesn't say that. That's the problem, right? So first of all, it doesn't say that the Zrika was like with intent to destroy. Let's say you were having a catch on the roof and you threw a little too far. So it's not clear from the Gemara that case would be ruled out. And then second of all, you would think that the Gemara's rationale would be related to the fact that the first guy like was Niskavin Lahazik. And instead of the Gemara just says, it's like, oh, this thing about Manatvira Tavar. Like, why is the second guy put there? Oh, because it's already broken. Which I think is too weak given the kind of interpretation that you're giving to the Gemara. You see that, Shmuel? That's why I think it's too good of an explanation for the case of the Gemara. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting question, Zolti. I'm not sure off the top of my head about that.
Like even if it's the same person, I don't even mean to forget like different people. Is it the same person? Like I exposed even like, you know, to Karen and now like my animal's damaged through Shane.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's an interesting question. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
So doesn't that like come up in the Rishonim? Like Tchilasol B'Pshiela X, the so full of onus, Y?
Yeah, you think that's directly related if it's
I don't remember any more details, I just remember vaguely.
Yeah, it's actually, I have that Tosis on the source sheet here. We'll look at that. Let me just get one last case in on this discussion to motivate the risk exposure as Nezek idea. So there's this pretty cool Shlomo Zalman in the Midrash Shlomo in Bava Kamma. And he says, he's talking about the Isra Lahazik. And he's trying to figure out like what Zachariah was showing in the Rambam. When is there, so if you're looking for Tashlumin, if you're looking for tashlumin cases, we all kind of agree that the tashlumin will be determined by the actual harm caused. Right? That's my response to Zolt's first question of today, right? If you're a poshiya kamazik person, how do you make sense of the fact that if no fender is actually broken, you're not going to have to pay for anything? And my answer is, that's a calculation of damages question, not about whether there's a shein mazik. Right, Zolt? That was our exchange. So Zacharia's response then was, well, look for cases where the iser is relevant, or the shein mazik is relevant, separate and apart from tashlumin. And I think Mr. Shlomo Zalman is very helpful because he brings in Kimli B'Jabbi Day into the discussion about Isra L'Hazik, and he says, maybe there's a nafkamina to this Isra. He's talking about Isra L'Hazik. Nafkamina b'chiyai gavna shebishah shepasha v'lo shamar hoyachai misa. So he's trying to say, maybe there's a nafkamina to the question of Isra L'Hazik. He's not dealing with our question about poshek and mazik. But he says, maybe the iser becomes relevant if you talk about kimle. Im amrina bezek kimle b'javmine. Kimo, chofer bor b'shabes, depata mishum kimle b'javmine, derak machiyuv al hashmira niftar. So he's saying, if the reason why you're chayiv for this kemamon is because of your breach of shmira, then, suppose you're chofer bor on Shabbos, and somebody falls in after Shabbos. So, where do you say kimle b'jabmi day? Because kimle b'jabmi day requires some sort of simultaneity between the mamon and between the misa and the mamon. So here, the victim falls in after Shabbos, right? Would you say that the pshia itself is sufficient to generate the simultaneity? What's going on here, Adin?
I was like, this is going halfway. But we could go even if we want to. Like, if we want to identify, is this a purely tashlumen? Is this a din tashlumen or a din in shame iser or something like that?
Yeah, you're saying for visa cases.
Yeah.
Isn't your case exactly like the Gemara's case from the Zikin? Isn't that the exact same case?
I'm saying, do we say manatvir tavar, but by isurim and not by financial liability?
Yeah, but that would be like an iser versus mamon question, right? Oh, are you saying that's a way of pulling apart the risk exposure question from?
Maybe I misunderstood.
Metaphysical question.
Yeah, so maybe what's our goal in? Can you just read what are we trying to get out of Rav Shlomo Zalman here?
So this Rav Shlomo Zalman is a bit of a different point. This is just to establish the Poshea Kemazik theory. And he wants to know, when we say Kimle B'drav Mide for the Zikin and Chil Shabbos, so is it the moment of Kriyas Habor that we say you're Mazik and liable for? In which case it's coterminous with Chil Shabbos, so you'd be putter from Nezek part, or is it when like the person falls in and gets harmed? In which case,
got it. Okay, so I misunderstood what we're trying to get out of this.
Yeah,
I'm curious about my question.
Yeah, but hold off on it for 1 second. Does everybody see the Rishon Zalman here? See, I think this. What's that, Zacharia?
I think it's great. I think Bor is also a great example because Bor, you generally say, is very front loaded.
Yeah. I agree. So it's very much like the pshia for like the wrongdoing consists in the kriya sabor, and Rav Shlomo Zalman here is suggesting that, yeah, even if the victim falls in at a later date, like the crucial moment when we view as a mazik is shebisha shepasha. Right. That's the so I think this very much supports that way of looking at things of poshiya kamazik. Okay. So all this is to motivate the idea of Poshea Kemazik to explain why Tchilas B'Pshia Sof Bonus Ubichai. The idea being that once you're actually Poshea, that's a sufficient condition to hold you liable. Even if the actual molecules are destroyed by an onus, there would be grounds for holding you chayav. Jared, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't thought about this enough, but I'm not sure how good of a raya that is, because the reason that you're chayav misa is because the punishment's worse, not because you did it first.
But the point is, it's not about which one you did first. You're only putter for kimle b'drav minei on the mamon if it happened at the same time that you did that you were chayav for misa.
This didn't happen at the same time, it happened afterwards.
Whoa, wait one second. So in Rishon Zalman's case.
I'm thinking about Rishon Zalman's case.
So you dig a bore on Shabbos.
Right.
The victim falls in on Sunday. So in order to be putter for the mamon aspect, the chi of mamon has to be simultaneous with the chil Shabbos. And Rishon Zalman here is suggesting that maybe you would be putter because it's the Shah Shepasha for which you're liable for, in which case the Misa and Mamon happen at the same time. But your Mechal Shabbos through digging the pit, I guess it's Choresh, and your Poshea through digging the pit. So there's simultaneity that triggers Kimle B'drav Minei. Whereas if it's like when the victim falls into the boar that makes you liable, like the destruction of molecules, then there's no simultaneity. And from the fact that Rav Shlomo Zalman here is arguing that Kimle would apply, Dipatim Mishim Kimle, that suggests that the Chia would be for the Pshia. Does that make sense, Jared?
Yeah. I won't bite, but I think so.
You could push a little more if you want a better explanation or...
I don't know. I would just think that, like, one could just make the argument that it has nothing to do with the timing. It just has to do with the fact that there's two Isurim and one, you get a bigger punishment. So you take the bigger one. It has nothing to do with any timing.
No, but that's true. That's always true for Kimle. But if there's no simultaneity, you'd be chayav for both separately. Right? If the Chiyav Mamon happens at a different point in time from the Isur, from the Chiyav Misa, there's no reason why one will eclipse the other.
He's not wrong that that the Achron love making like nafkaminas from Kimle, but it's not clear that Kimle is about Zisman Isser and not about Zisman Tashlumim.
That's a...
Yeah, it's not so clear. Like, if anything, Kimle probably is about, it's like, like main svaras for Kimle have to do with Tashlumim, about not having to, you know, double jeopardy. Not necessarily about the Isserim themselves, or Basin can't pay two different penalties at the same time.
It's right, that's true. Right. All that's true. But from the fact that Shlomo Zalman thinks that you would have Kimle, shows that he thinks that... what I don't care about his Chiddush and Kimle, that's true. But it shows that he thinks that you're Chayiv for the Pshia, not for the harm. You see that, Zilk?
You know, I agree with your read of Shlomo Zalman. He just happens to be following like a classic Achronish trope to like make... like it's like it comes with the classic nafkamina, just like kiddushin is so just like chetzi eved, chetzi shifcha. Like Achronim use it all the time as like a way of like, you know, distilling different principles, I guess.
I got it, but you're saying that, you know, under different assumptions of Kimle, this wouldn't be as good of a nafkamina.
In practice, I don't think Kimle is a good nafkamina, but according to his understanding, I think it's like a good point.
Okay, fair enough. So I say let's stop here. This is all to motivate the Poshea Kemazek theory. What we should pick up with on Tuesday is to go deeper into the machlokas between Riff and Tosfos about Ones Haba Machmasa Pshia. So I think that's the look at this Riff. I added this Tosavina Parrots on the Bavma base, very interesting Tosavina Parrots, and the Ritva there. Then we'll look at the Riff on the Chaf and Dapia Riff. And Sugan Ayin Ches with Tosos and the Ramban. Sound good? All right, Shkach, everyone. See you. Everyone have a good Shabbos. And see you all on Tuesday. Shkach.
Shabbos.
Take care.